Excuse me.
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 Hello, everybody, and welcome to Morgan Dorks. This is a bi-weekly Daria podcast where we take an in-depth look at our favorite animated teenage misanthrope episode by episode. I'm Rob Press.
And I'm Nissa Lee. And today we are looking at season 5, episode 4, Camp Fear, in which a good old... Wait.
Oh, no.
No. In which a trip to good old Camp Grizzly brings back some crappy memories for Daria. Meanwhile, Jane and Trent go on a quest to find the soul of music or something. And Helen and Jake take a trip down memory lane to find it is kind of memoryless. There's not much there. The episode aired on March 12th, 2001, and was written by Jonathan Greenberg. This is the second of only two episodes Greenberg wrote, the first being Groped by an Angel, sitting at number 28 in our rankings.
Yeah, yeah. If we seem like we're a little bit punchy right at the start, it's because our previous version of this intro went about as badly as any version of our intro can go, up to the point of like totally botching having any kind of summary in our episode notes. So we'll get into our beat by beat momentarily. I just want to take a little, just take a minute or two and rewind 2 weeks to our talk of about Fat Like Me, which was, of course, the previous episode we covered.
Yeah, let's go way back in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah. It has stuck in my craw for the last 2 weeks about how my own like failure to just look up the title of the damn episode, because, you know, if you listen to the last like half hour of our previous episode, you'll note that we discovered like it was a comparison to a novel published by a white journalist in the late 50s, I think. Yeah, late 50s, early 60s. And it just made for a lot of really kind of gross comparisons between the sort of like tourism of the white man into the world of black people.
And that title was Black Like Me.
Yes, yes. And the sort of tourism of Sandy into the world of obese individuals. You know, the major difference, of course, being that Sandy went right back to being a skinny white girl. And
she wasn't really fat to begin with.
Yeah, totally. And of course, white man never became black and can't go, and, you know, black people can't suddenly stop being black. So there's a shitload there that we got so flustered about right at the end of an episode after we ranked the damn thing.
I know.
And I still think we probably would have ended up ranking it right around where we did, because I think we still would have had a lot of the same reservations. But also, like, god damn, that entire conversation would have been so much better informed just by that simple fact, by knowing that simple fact.
So all of this is to say we're sorry.
Yeah, mostly I am. Like, that's that, you know, typically I'm the one who ends up digging into that kind of stuff. And for some reason, I just didn't do it this time around. And it just happened to be.
The winter's been hard, man. We're all feeling it. I think. I hope everyone can forgive us.
Yeah. It's not like anybody was like, what the hell, or anything like that. It's one of those things that like bothers me and maybe one other person ever. But
I'm sure that everyone was very much entertained
to hear us freaking out at the end of the episode.
If they made it that far.
Oh, well, okay. They got the episode ranked. I'm sure this is wrapped up nicely. Okay. Just going to mark as played and ignore the fact that there's another 30 minutes of discussion.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah. All right. Got that off my chest. Feel a little bit better about it. Anyway, So we have this whole other episode, Camp Fear, by the way, based on the title of the movie Cape Fear, Robert De Niro. That's a legendary film. I never thought it was anywhere near as good as most folks did, but whatever.
I really don't think I've seen it.
It's not bad. I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, I don't think it's what it's made out to be, I guess is my.
I don't really seek out Robert De Niro films.
That's it. Oh, all right.
I don't know. I just don't. I'm not saying that they're bad. It's just I don't think they're bad at all.
He's been in a number of bangers.
Yeah. I'm not just like, I'm in the mood for De Niro tonight.
Yeah. I don't know. I get like that every once in a while. It's sometimes you just gotta watch Heat, you know?
I love you so much.
Thank you.
You're just like, you know, that sentence just really solidified our friendship there.
I love you too. Do you want to get to the beat by beat?
Yes.
Christ. All right. Gonna hit the button. I swore I wouldn't have much editing to do for this episode.
Oh, and we're a mess. And
boy, is that not playing
out. It's really amazing.
We open at the Morgendorfer residence where Jake's trying to fish his watch out of the garbage disposal as Daria, channeling the spirit of those folks who watch NASCAR just for the crashes, looks on. Quinn runs in with a pamphlet, and it turns out both she and Daria have received invitations to Camp Grizzly's 5-year reunion. Brace yourself for this one. Quinn's super interested in going, and Daria's not. Helen says she can't force Daria to go, but if she sticks around, they're going to be cleaning the garage.
Nice setup to start. And the way that Jake says, Daria, you have small hands, while hovering over the garbage disposal. Oh, man, that's creepy as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I sympathize with the man for, you know, losing anything down a garbage disposal royally sucks, but come on. There are better ways to handle this. I guess it makes total sense for camps to have reunions, but the thought never really like occurred to me outside of this episode of this show. I think we've talked about it before. I think I was always like pretty jealous of kids who got to go to summer camp, but I also think chances are I would have hated it.
Yeah. First of all, the camp leader makes it very clear at the beginning that this is basically a tactic to get them to send their kids to the camp when they have kids, which is like really weird timing, right?
A little bit, yeah, since everyone's in high school. Oh, boy.
Yeah, like he's just kind of assuming that everyone's going to turn 18 and become parents, I think.
Hell yeah.
I am pretty sure I have said this before as well, but I went to a day camp for the summer, for a few summers. And even though I appreciate my parents sending me and giving me that experience and getting me out of their hair, honestly, I didn't like it. And I really just wanted to stay home and read. But I did learn how to play Spit. So
there you go.
There's that.
That's a card game.
Yes.
by the way.
Yeah, but I wasn't just like spitting everywhere. No.
No. No.
That came later. Oh, yeah.
Lastly, with this opening scene, Jake mentions his John Wayne commemorative coins. I just want to point out Jake absolutely would have John Wayne commemorative coins. Mm-hmm. And just an obsession with John Wayne in general. For those unfamiliar with John Wayne, and I say that because I really do wonder how big a deal he is outside of the United States. He was an iconic American actor known primarily for his work in Westerns. His career spanned more than 50 years from the 1920s to his death in the late 70s, and he acted in 169 feature films.
Ooh.
That is a number of films you typically only reach if you're working in a very different industry. Nicknamed the Duke, which also the kind of name you typically only get in a very different industry.
I was thinking the same thing.
His legacy is that of a take-no-shit, rough-and-gruff cowboy, making him an object of adoration for both the greatest and silent generations, and by transitive property, the boomers. His back-when-men-were-men attitude has been co-opted by said boomers as a shorthand for complaining about political correctness. Also, his actual name was Marion Robert Morrison.
That's a very pretty name.
Yeah, that's a very nice name. It's also like leagues away from John Wayne.
Yes, yes, it is. So it makes sense that Jake would have this obsession with the manly man, John Wayne.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's, and you know, again, kind of like that greatest and silent to boomer transitive property thing. That sounds like specifically someone that Jake's dad was absolutely gaga over, and Jake sort of inherited that.
It's really, really hard for Americans to shake the cowboy mythology.
Yes.
It's just, you know, even if you're a city person, you know, if you did not grow up in a rural area, I imagine it's very hard to separate yourself from that history and that and I think it's more accurate to say mythology, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, you know, there's so many issues that we could dive into, like, you know, how problematic that mythology is. But, you know, most relevant here is the toxic masculinity that it promotes.
Oh, absolutely. I wonder if maybe it's dying off a bit because Westerns and Western stories in general have died off kind of hard. Like I definitely think kids growing up still know, you know, they still know like the mythos of the cowboy, but I wonder if, you know, it's anywhere near as popular a thing as it once was.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. And I feel like this is something that I'm going to be encountering as Arthur gets older. Because already, you know, he has heard of cowboys, you know.
Sure.
He loves horses. But I feel like as long as there's horses, you can't escape the idea of cowboys in America, right? But I think that the whole like cowboys and Indians thing is becoming, you know, untouchable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, like we tried to watch Peter Pan, or Jeff and Arthur tried to watch Peter Pan, and Jeff was just like, "Oh no,
oh no,
no,
oh,
we can't watch this." Yeah.
Yeah. I do think so. There's a distinction to be made because, like, yes, the whole cowboys and Indians thing, obviously pretty untouchable. And the cowboy mythos is one thing, but also like cowboy is just kind of a general occupation to some extent.
Yes.
And there are people who legitimately are cowboys.
Yes. But that's not what is like,
no, that's
romanticized in
no,
film.
No. The,
that's where the film starts. Right. And then right. The cowboy goes on his cowboy quest.
Right. Yeah. He goes on his cowboy quest, which involves, you know, rescuing a damsel and shooting a lot of Native Americans and, yeah, just all sorts of things. Maybe getting into it with the local oil baron. Mm-hmm. There's always an oil baron. If you're going to have a horse, you got to have a cowboy. And then if you're going to have a cowboy, you got to have an oil baron. That's just how it goes. Oh, boy.
So that was a tangent.
Yeah, remember when I said this episode was going to be short? At the Lane residence, Mystic Spiral is practicing. Kind of. They're mostly arguing. Jesse brought a sitar, and that's apparently an affront to rock. Nobody tell these guys about the Beatles. Trent walks away as they squabble with one another. Elsewhere in the house, Jane and Daria are watching television, talking about Daria's miserable experience at Camp Grizzly. Trent wanders in, talking about Mystic Spiral being past their prime, thinking maybe he needs to take a break and get away for a bit. Jane suggests she and Trent give Daria a ride to her Camp Grizzly reunion, to which Daria responds, "There's just one catch." And we cut to a deeply unlikely road trip with Daria, Jane, Trent, and Quinn all piled into the tank. She laments the lack of nearby outlet shopping, while Trent continues to talk about how he feels the band is spinning its wheels.
I love Jesse in the scene.
In everything ever.
Everything ever, yes. He's really giving off some like Robert Plant vibes here. His line, if a shark doesn't keep swimming, it just stands still. And then the other one says, we're not a dead fish, right, Trent?
There are a fair amount of pretty strong little lines in here. In this scene in general, like we get Daria talking about her Camp Grizzly experience, and she recalls the jingle that they used to have to sing, which involved the lines, we'll never forget you, dear old Camp Grizzly. You're with us in sunshine and weather more drizzly.
Fantastic.
It's incredible. And also Jane's line to Trent of, I believe you're supposed to hit your prime before you pass it, but okay.
I like how she just grabs opportunity here and runs with it.
She's the idea person.
Yeah, she really is.
Kind of along those lines, like I'm sort of surprised we haven't really explored this narrative arc a ton for Trent, where he's just like disillusioned with the band entirely and needing to like find himself as an artist. It seems like kind of a natural fit.
Yeah. I feel like he's always, they're always changing names, you know.
And, oh, they're talking about changing the name.
Talking about changing the name, excuse me. he's always, late for practice, not actually getting up on stage at the gig. So it's like only a matter of time that this would happen.
Similarly to talking about Jane really grabbing the opportunity, like we've become so accustomed to Jane Lane best friend that sometimes it's easy to miss some of what she actually does for Daria. But we see it in action here yet again. She's pushing Daria to leave her comfort zone, do something different, but she's not twisting her arm about it. Like, I don't know. It's a very small thing. I don't think it's meant to be any major narrative point. It's just, I think there's something nice about the fact that Daria is dead set against going to this reunion until Jane suggests, hey, you know what? Come on, we'll make a thing of it.
Yeah, it's the Jane-Daria dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Daria is inert and Jane is active. her ability to get to make something of this experience. I think it's all that time making burlap sacks at her parents' commune. She's really making the best of it.
So everybody arrives at Camp Grizzly and Quinn immediately meets up with some suspiciously familiar old friends. Ostensibly their names are Tracy, Cindy, and Tatiana. Daria flashes back to the last time she and her sister were here to the tune of Mary by Supergrass. 5 years ago, Daria was every bit as reluctant to be here, but so was Quinn. Right up until she spotted Tracy, Cindy, and Tatiana, who all happen to have the same voice actors as the fashion club. When I ask Quinn about the weird girl she arrived with, Quinn lies and says it's her distant cousin. And so we see the origin of that lie, as Daria has been Quinn's distant cousin ever since. So, all right, bit of a tangent here. In the video game series BioShock, you are eventually revealed to be playing as one version of infinite alternate universe versions of the main character, all of whom are destined to go through a series of events involving a lighthouse. Long story. The exact quote surrounding this is, there's always a lighthouse, there's always a man. That is all I can think of as I look at Tracy, Cindy, and Tatiana. There is always Tracy, Cindy, and Tatiana. There's always a fashion club.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I love this idea that Quinn found these three girls in different timelines.
What I find really fascinating is that Quinn remembers this as a simpler time in which girls can just be girls, you know? And it's just like, she was just grooming herself for high school. I don't know. it's so strange. But, you know, from the get-go, we know that Quinn is going to be disappointed. Right. Because if this is what she remembers.
And, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Boy. Also, talking about Daria's younger self, I forgot how wonderful Daria's higher-pitched voice is. It's literally just they took Daria's voice and pitched it up ever so slightly.
Yeah.
Also, pretty funny that Quinn's voice is exactly the same.
Of course. I love that when Daria gets out of the car, she's holding Animal Farm.
Yes.
And in the movie, Is It Fall Yet? She said that Animal Farm was her favorite book when she was younger. So hooray for continuity. This actually reminds me a lot of Is It Fall Yet? Because of the whole camp thing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some of the same interesting decisions. Back in the present day, Daria is approached by Amelia, someone who is super happy to see her. This is a huge surprise to Jane and Trent, who assumed, fairly, that Daria never befriended anybody. They're digging into the subject a bit when Skip Stevens, Camp Grizzly alumni coordinator, drops by. His enthusiasm is repellent, and Jane and Trent immediately hop into the van and drive away, leaving Daria looking deeply uncertain about how the rest of this weekend's going to go. And we head into the end of Act 1, again with Mary by Supergrass.
I'm pretty sure we see Daria, like, physically repulsed by the idea of interacting with Amelia.
Yeah.
She's just like, oh, my God, no.
Yeah, we're going to dig into these two characters' interaction throughout this episode. It is interesting. I'm not sure I come away liking either of them, but yeah, we'll have
to. But it's worth noting that Amelia looks quite a bit like Daria.
Yeah.
You know, the glasses, yeah, just a little bit dumpy.
Yeah, there's actually, so Amelia actually doesn't look terribly far off from how Daria looked in Beavis and Butthead. Which, you know, I mean, I guess if Amelia's going to look like Daria, then she's probably going to look a little bit like Daria did in Beavis and Butthead. But yeah, there's an interesting, you know, interesting character note for her to sort of model herself after that.
Amelia is the Daria prototype.
Oh, boy. It just comes off feeling a little single white female is all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Regardless of how little I end up liking either of them in this episode, I don't hate either of them anywhere near as much as I hate Skip Stevens. the difference being that we are absolutely supposed to hate Skip Stevens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm always afraid that if I'm not careful, I could be Skip Stevens.
You could not be Skip Stevens.
I do think my inner Jane always wins, but, active, you know, enthusiastic, but still weird and cool.
Yeah, or that's the thing.
Cool in the way that it just because I'm weird.
you have a
I'm not really cool.
You have a positivity and an enthusiasm, and that is, you know, that is great. You don't, however, eat, breathe, and sleep positivity and enthusiasm,
or summer camp,
or summer camp in quite the way that Skip Stevens does. I think it would be tough for anybody to. Except for Skip Stevens and the Skip Stevens of the world, because we all know a Skip Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
Oy. Act 2 opens in the Morgendorfer garage where Jake and Helen are going through their things. Jake stumbles across some scuba gear because this is a man with a temperament built for underwater exploration. And it sparks a rather tense conversation in which Jake notes that Helen's busy schedule kept them from actually using said scuba gear or enjoying a bunch of other family activities over the years. Trouble brewing. Meanwhile, Jane and Trent pop by a bait shop to the tune of Burn to Shine by Ben Harper. Jane investigates their homemade cookies, and it stirs something in Trent, who's really digging the "you pay more for homemade because of the love went into it, because of the love that went into it" vibe. So we get some conflict brewing, like, immediately between Jake and Helen here. And it's interesting because, like, we see Jake get excited, angry, or confrontational around Helen all the time, but we rarely see him, like, confront her directly about something. And it's even more rare that we see her just straight up avoiding that conversation. Like, she's doing everything she can to deflect this away.
Yeah, they're in a small enclosed space and she can't really escape him. So she's trying to make the best of this. But I really like the thematic cohesion that's going on with this B plot. No, I think it's a C plot.
Yes, yes.
We don't really get a lot of C plots. I like the thematic cohesion. Like, Daria is revisiting the horrors of her childhood summer camp. Jake and Helen are also digging through the past, organizing the mess, throwing out what they don't need anymore, confronting disappointments. You know, this parallel works well.
I wonder who at the end of the episode. Okay, so it's a neat parallel that I didn't put that together. I think it's a very good comparison. I wonder who did a better job by the end of this episode of actually digging into past disappointments and talking it out.
Honestly, maybe this is something we should talk about later. Yeah. Maybe Jake and Helen.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm leaning too. We're going to have to get into that. I'm looking forward to that discussion. Also say there's something kind of charming about Trent being able to, like, perfectly articulate why these cookies should be more expensive. You know, for as much as we and the series, to be fair, have ragged on him and maybe considered his artfulness, quote unquote, to just be aimlessness sitting on apathy's shoulders while wearing a trench coat. This conversation at the bait shop says that, like, no, he actually does kind of understand the artistic spirit to some extent. He understands the value of creating something, of letting other people indulge in what you've created.
There's like a Trent Lane philosophy. I'm sure that if he could stay awake long enough, he could write a book about it. But, you know, but that's not going to happen. Maybe, you know, a philosophy professor will write one of those philosophy according to Daria.
Oh, man. Yes, please.
Yes. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Maybe that's what we do after this podcast is done.
Except I don't really know anything about philosophy, so.
Neither do I. Who cares? Philosophers don't know anything about philosophy. That's philosophy. That's how it works.
That's not fair.
No, that's not fair. That's not fair. Please, philosophers don't. Actually, no. Philosophers, write in. I want to know. Over at the Camp Grizzly reunion, Amelia seems intent on hanging out with Daria, who doesn't at all seem intent on hanging out with Amelia. Everybody else goes on a hike, but Daria wants to sit at a picnic table in silence and read Animal Farm, so Amelia ends up just kind of sitting with her. Amelia tries to bring up old memories of fun times at camp, but what seemed like fun times to Amelia apparently weren't that fun to Daria. As we hear Clogger by 16 Horsepower, Amelia mentions one memory in particular, the watermelon game, that really gets Daria's goat, because it involved Skip, that motherfucker, yanking Daria into the lake by her arm, which sends her glasses flying elsewhere into the water. Ugh. Yeah.
Any scene at a summer camp with a bathing suit makes me very self-conscious.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, oh no, everyone's vulnerable.
Yeah, and you know, also as a glasses wearer, like, doubly vulnerable.
Absolutely. Because
holy shit, like, it's I love that the first thing you see is the swimsuit. The first thing I see is the glasses, or are the glasses. And you know, in totality, just what a shitty way to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. We have talked in the past, I forget the name of the episode, but you know, the episode where Daria got contacts, where it becomes kind of a part of your personality. And there's a certain like vulnerability to wearing glasses. Because, you know, without them, if you super duper need them, when you don't have them, you are useless. And, you know, waking up in the morning and, you know, having to like reach over and put like, there are people who just get up and they open their eyes and they can see things. And that is crazy to me.
I can.
That's bonkers.
But I do wear prescription lenses for like distance. But I often don't wear them, and then I just get cranky because I don't realize that that I can't really see well, you know. It just makes me cranky.
I'm squinting a little bit more than I'd like. This blurry.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, why is everything just kind of blurry? Oh yeah.
Maybe the world's blurry. Maybe it's not me.
Yeah.
I should go back and say, if you lose your glasses and you can't really see anything, you're not useless. That's not fair terminology, especially to people who have serious sight issues. It's just extremely debilitating to need your glasses and not have them, I guess is the, you know, it makes life much, much harder, especially if you lose them in a fucking lake.
Through a lens darkly.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That's the episode.
Man, you're the one pulling the episode titles out now. Oh,
heck
boy.
Yeah. Look at me.
So I feel bad for Amelia here.
just here.
Well, you know, attitudes change. She's trying, and Daria's being pretty shitty to her here. Like, it's clear that what Amelia thought was like rebellious and independent attitude when they were younger was really just Daria struggling to fit in and having a really bad time. And it's understandable that Daria wouldn't want to spend too much time in those memories, which is fair. But the way in which that is manifesting right now in Amelia's direction is really shitty.
Yeah, I agree. Although I didn't really take it as Daria struggling to fit in as much as Daria being dragged along for the fun and it just not working out for her.
That's like fair, yeah.
The horse running away and tossing Daria in the river, causing her to get 9 stitches. That sticks out in my mind. But yeah, she's being pretty shitty.
She probably lost her glasses in the river too.
Probably. The fact that she is revisiting Animal Farm, which, as we mentioned before, was most likely the book she escaped to during her first camp experience, it strikes me as interesting and bittersweet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those details that I don't want to think about too much because it makes me sad, but I can't help pointing it out. This is just Daria's way of processing and remembering. She doesn't need to do it with other people. Books can be our best friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you are the kind of kid who spent your time with your nose buried in a book when everything else was just too much or too boring or too weird or too difficult, you can relate hard to that.
Mm-hmm.
On the hike, Quinn and Alternate Fashion Club realize they were never much for hikes. They sit down and reminisce. They also talk about the watermelon game and the prototype of the 3 J's, the 3 B's, Billy, Bobby, and Benji. Over in the Morgendorfer garage, things continue to spiral as Jake keeps finding stuff they picked up for vacations and getaways that they never actually got to go on because of Helen's schedule. All right, if they're going to spend time on this in the episode, then we're going to spend some time talking about it. What do we really think of this conflict so far? Like, Helen having trouble establishing a balance between work and family is absolutely nothing new, but it's also pretty clear that she's the more established professional. She's almost certainly the reason they get to live in the nice neighborhood they're in and in the nice house they're in. And she is definitely more in tune with the needs of her daughters than Jake is. So it's hard to watch him attack her on this front. But also, like, we know all about Jake's abandonment issues, and we know he feels like he's playing second fiddle to Helen and her career. We know that's a thing on his mind, and we know that's why some of these anxieties manifest in the way they do.
Yeah. I like it. I know that it is a point that's been made many times before. But I, as I said before, I think this works thematically. This scenario makes those moments of abandonment and disappointed into physical objects, right? So it makes it very real. And I think that's what separates this from those other times. It's not just something that Jake is complaining about that we could interpret as an exaggeration. Here is the proof in the garage.
Stored away where we don't have to look at it.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
God damn. I'm actually really liking this C plot way more than some of the other stuff happening in the episode so far.
I think it's really smart.
Yeah. Over at the bait shop owner's house. Yes, we're at the bait shop owner's house now. His name is Earl. We hear Money to Burn by Richard Ashcroft as Jane and Trent sit down to some cheese sandwiches. Jane is thoroughly unimpressed, but Trent's insistent that Earl and his wife have country wisdom that will help them figure out where Mystic Spiral went off track. Jane insists he just needed a break from the band and they a break from him, but Trent's not really convinced. I don't know. I feel like Jane is being rude as hell here. Like, I get that there isn't much to be impressed by, but I don't figure on Jane being the sort of person to just outright shit on hospitality to the face of the person offering it. And that's what's rough for me here.
Yeah. I'm definitely coming from the position that hospitality is sacred. It's the glue that holds humanity together. But the inability to politely decline an offer of hospitality can land you in this horror movie scenario. They are like seconds away from passing out from poisoning and waking up chained in a dark barn. So Jane really should have spoken up sooner.
This is suddenly Rocket is well ahead of our C plot, in my opinion.
The camp fear. that title really comes to mind. Oh,
shit. They bamboozled you. They made you think it was one thing.
That said, I think that this episode is doing something really interesting with the romanticization of country wisdom. Now I'm reminded of the romanticization of the cowboy, right? Like, there is legitimacy to the idea of paying more for the love a person puts into their wares or cookies or crafts, whatever. But if that person doesn't know how to unwrap the single serving cheese product before placing it onto the bread, there's just no brain in that heart. So it's like the country practice of harvesting roadkill, right? If you don't know how to do it properly, you could get really, really sick. So maybe unwrap that cheese.
A fair point.
Or get out before they chain you in a dark barn.
Just don't eat meat that you can't identify. Don't do it. It's just a bad idea.
You know, if you... pick it up if you see it run over, and that's it. If you don't know how long it's been sitting there, why are we talking about roadkill? I'm sorry.
This is a bit of a sidetrack, but I was just having a conversation about this very thing last night. I'm going to drop an image link into our chat. I'm leaving this in the podcast too, because I'm going to link to this photo in the episode notes. But I just dropped a photo in the chat. I want you to take a look at that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a woman with a raccoon on a leash.
That is First Lady Grace Coolidge.
Oh.
And the Coolidge family pet, Rebecca.
Sometimes I love people.
So Rebecca was a raccoon that was originally sent to the White... She's from Mississippi. And she was originally sent to the White House because they were going to eat her for Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And then they decided to keep her.
Because raccoons are awesome.
Right? Totally. The little hands and the little masks, they're so cute. I love them. Anyway, yeah. So We had a conversation not too long ago about the fact that I want to own a raccoon and everybody has one except me. And further proof is that Grace Coolidge, First Lady of the United Friggin' States.
Well, when you become First Lady, you could have a pet raccoon.
Look, you know what? If that's the bar we're setting, I'll make it. I'll figure it out.
All right.
Oh, boy. Alrighty. Over at camp, it's cookout time. Daria angers Skip by trying to grab her burger before he says it's okay to do so. And yet again, Daria Morgendorfer doesn't get her goddamn cheeseburger.
I like how they go to the table just with empty buns.
Just with the buns.
Yeah, just with the buns.
It's so sad. She wanders off to the picnic table alone again with Amelia and points out that Skip doesn't actually have any authority beyond what's been artificially granted to him by this completely arbitrary social order known as camp, and that nobody here would associate with anybody else unless they were brought together by such a construct, and it's a desperate attempt to feel a connection that just isn't there. So, you know, that reading of Animal Farm is going pretty well for her. Mm-hmm. Amelia is still trying, though, and Daria finally lets her have it. She doesn't want to be a part of a crowd. She doesn't want a crowd following her. So if Amelia could just go away, that'd be great. Amelia says she had really been looking forward to seeing Daria, and that she realizes now that Daria just doesn't like anybody. She storms off, and only now does Daria realize maybe she was being a bit harsh. Skip leads the camp in song as Daria regrets being a total shithead, and I Just Want to Love You, open parentheses, give it to me, close parentheses, by Jay-Z, leads us into the end of Act 2.
Daria's peak shithead is, why don't you go find a quiet corner somewhere and practice being an individual?
Yeah. God damn.
Wow.
All right. Look, she's not wrong about Skip or camp in general, at least not from her perspective. If you're not the type who values social gatherings or social interactions, it's pretty easy to see how camp would be a pile of hot dog shit. If you were dreading coming back here, I get how the last thing you'd want to deal with is someone all up in your space at all times. It's still a pretty bad look to be as mean as she's being. And I don't know, between that and Jane, like, I feel like they're both being like kind of uncharacteristically dickish in this episode. And it's weird to me.
Okay. So yeah, but I don't think they're being uncharacteristically dickish. Like, they're being placed in situations that they don't want to be in. And, you know, if they have to speak up about it, then they're going to do that. Like, Daria's mom backed her into a corner and made her choose between camp and cleaning out the garage. So she did what a teenager would do, right? Trent accepted the invitation to the murder kitchen without consulting Jane. So yeah, she's going to make this difficult. You know, gods forbid young women object to doing something that they don't want to do, right?
Okay. All right. Hold on. So fair. That neither of them want to be in the situation they're in. My response to that would be that in both cases, they are firing away at a completely innocent party in response because it's not the bait shop owner or his wife's fault that Trent forced Jane into this situation. And it's not Amelia's fault that Daria's mom forced her into that situation.
That's true. I'll give that to you.
So I feel like, look, they are, both of them are completely in the right to feel shitty about the place they're in. I get that. I 100% agree. I am with them. I think we've all been there. It sucks. But I feel like both of them tend to have the presence of mind to not just like fire away at people who don't necessarily deserve it or people who are like,
the thing is, like, do they deserve it though? I mean,
Amelia will deserve it.
And Maybe Daria knows. Because, like, she spent summers with this girl, at least one summer.
That's fair.
I mean, so she is familiar with this person. And You know, maybe she could see it coming. I'm reading a little bit into this, but
yeah.
But also, you know, Earl and his wife are, you know, feeding Jane and Trent plastic, and you know, it's
it's not great.
No,
they're not great.
It's not great.
They're also not. They're also not meaning ill, though.
Like, yeah, they're very sweet.
Yeah, they're being hospitable. Even their hospitality sucks, just because. But that's not necessarily like that. They're being malicious about it. It's just a matter of they kind of suck at it. That's all.
I think Daria's being more outright rude than Jane is, to be honest.
Yes.
I think Jane is like being low-key rude. but it's Daria that's doing more damage here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is one of those things where, like, if Jane were around Daria and if Daria were around Jane, these snarky comments would be getting made between them.
Yes.
And it wouldn't be a matter of like, all right, well, I'm just going to go both barrels at the person who's sitting right in front of me. But yeah, because they're in these foreign situations, to your point, these situations they don't want to be in, they just kind of, they lash out because they aren't sure what else to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. It's complex.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That was a good discussion. I'm glad we had
that. I got my claws out.
Yeah. It isn't very often that I have to be like, okay, all right. Oh, that was fun. That was animated. All right. Act three opens in the bait shop owner's house where a blindfolded Trent is trying some homemade potato chips. The experimental flavor is no flavor. They're trying to make chips that don't fight the dip.
Yum.
Trent is confused, and Jane points out that maybe the parallel he's trying to draw between this experience and his music has finally run out of pavement. Over in the Morgendorfer garage, we have a full-on argument, which promptly ends when Jake spots some lingerie Helen had bought to surprise him with during another getaway, which got canceled because of one of Jake's business trips. Seems all he needed was that one example of Helen thinking of him, and now all is forgiven. In fact, they're totally going to bone in that garage. Ay, ay, ay. Uh-huh. All right. I know that the larger point is Jake wanted some proof that Helen actually thinks of him and not work every once in a while, but something feels wrong to me about this wrapping up the way it did. This like, oh, you planned on surprising me with sex. Okay, we're cool. As though that's the only way that Jake can like comprehend Helen's appreciation of him, like the years of marriage, the financial support, and the tolerance of his outbursts weren't proof enough. Like, I don't know if I'm off base with that, but it feels weird.
Yeah, no, you are totally making a valid point. If we wanted to have some more thematic coherence, I would go with them finding a family photo album, maybe circa Camp Grizzly days or some of the girls' old toys, and they would reminisce and come to the conclusion that they worked that hard to provide for the girls, but that doesn't mean that they don't love each other and they can't still have fun, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe that's just too sentimental and beyond the target audience. And the garage door closing for sexy time is a quick and easy joke.
Yeah. Also, man, garages are filthy. That's how you're going to get whatever.
Yeah, things are going to fall. Yeah,
there's a reason to not there's a reason to not do that. the problem with a flavorless chip that doesn't fight the dip is that dips are made with some of that flavor in mind. You need the salt of the chip to counteract the creaminess of the dip. This is madness to me.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that they're dipping the chip into ketchup. So there's really no logic in that murder kitchen. Also, Christ. The moment that Earl turned on the tap to his grimy kitchen sink, you know, like basin style sink to pour them some home bottled water.
Oh, boy.
That made me want to yarts.
Yeah, that was yarts factor one right there. That's mm-hmm. bad stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, but as I mentioned with Amelia, she will retroactively deserve what Daria said to her. Earl and his wife kind of retroactively maybe deserve a little bit of Jane's snark.
Well, you know, if they just keep drinking that home bottled water, they'll probably get what's coming to them.
Oh my God. Jeez. Fucking vicious this episode.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
Maybe there should be just like a big disclaimer that like I grew up in a rural area. Like, you know.
These are my people. It's okay if I talk shit on them. Over at Camp Grizzly, Quinn and Alternate Fashion Club are getting along swimmingly, right up until Quinn accidentally reveals she stole one of their dates to a camp dance. Quinn's always been Quinn, and there's something kind of comforting about that. Alternate Fashion Club doesn't dig the backstabbery, though, and now Quinn's going to need a ride home. Elsewhere at the camp gathering, Daria notices Amelia sitting rather forlornly by herself. She tries to make conversation and maybe some amends, but Amelia's not having it. She rushes the stage where Skip's doing whatever it is he does and grabs the mic from his hand. She proceeds to go into monologue that sounds suspiciously like the one Daria dropped earlier, talking about how she wanted to fit in at this camp and follow the herd, but it sucked. And at this reunion, she was going to reconnect with someone who's kind of shitty, but someone who thinks for herself and doesn't care what anybody else thinks about it. And who cares if she ends up with no friends? Amelia rips off her Camp Grizzly shirt, inspires everybody else to do the same. They toss said shirts at Skip's feet as he loses his shit, and the rebellion is complete.
We should say that there were shirts under those Camp Grizzly shirts.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not things don't suddenly get really weird.
No. This isn't that kind of film.
No, or that kind of camp.
Nope. Man, I really don't like Amelia. Really don't like Amelia. This speech is exactly the attention-seeking behavior that Daria was trying to both dissuade and avoid.
Yeah.
So Amelia read the proverbial room and saw that things were largely not in Skip's favor and took advantage of it by stealing Daria's words and simultaneously bad-mouthing her. It sucks. And, you know, it makes for an awesome plot climax, but damn, she's so shitty.
Yeah, it's not great. I'm not sure what we're supposed to think about. Like, I know what I do think about it. I don't know what I'm supposed to think about it. Like, I don't know what the writers have in mind with how you're supposed to feel about Amelia after that incident. Because, like, and I mean, if you're Daria Morgendorfer, you're probably a little conflicted by that whole speech. Because, you know, Amelia's sitting there and, like, praising your independent attitude, but also basically saying you're kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, sure, she's unpleasant. Sure, she's antisocial. Sure, she says whatever's on her mind with no regard for others' feelings. But at least she thinks for herself and marches to her own drummer. Like, woof, damn. Mm. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, conflicted by that whole thing.
It's really thinly veiled revenge. That's really all it is, and I don't understand how the rest of this plot plays out. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I kind of ended up with that too. Like, it's bizarre. It's just not particularly good / sensible narrative. Like,
yeah, I mean, if. I guess that, like, Amelia is the more social and active one of this, you know, duo, the Amelia-Daria duo. So, you know, this is what would happen if Daria actually spoke up about what she thinks. Oh, thank you, Amelia, for speaking up for me. No, it's not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth noting that, like, when Daria sees this coming, Daria sees this coming and reacts with horror. Like, she knows, it's like the the guy getting run over by a steamroller in Austin Powers. Like, you're just standing there waiting for it to hit you. it's bad. And so, yeah, like, you know, to your point earlier, maybe Daria knew exactly what was coming because maybe she just knew Amelia enough. And, you know, if we are to take that reading of like, maybe Daria knew this character better than we knew this character, so Daria's reaction was supposed to seem a little off kilter, right up until we saw exactly what kind of person Amelia is, then that's one thing. I don't really know if that's the intent.
Right. Because, well, the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
We'll get to, but yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I am completely okay with Skip getting his comeuppance.
Oh, yeah.
Suck it, Skip.
Yeah. And Mr. Potts, the camp leader, his pragmatic reaction is golden. It's a camp kid. Just chill already.
Just chill. Yeah, get over it. Come on. As the reunion winds down, Daria and Amelia have apparently made amends. In fact, it turns out Daria has been something of an inspiration. She's being lauded for it as Jane and Trent wander back into the picture. They rib her for her surprise popularity, and she storms into the tank. Trent remarks that maybe the trip wasn't a total loss, and this obviously gets to Jane a bit. On the drive home, Jane and Trent regale Daria with the story of the bait shop couple. Well, Jane does. Trent seems lost in thought. Turns out he's writing some new songs. Mystic Spiral should be okay after all. You'll notice there's no mention of Quinn being part of this drive home. It turns out she got a ride with someone else, Skip, who's still quite sore about the whole Amelia destroyed his world thing, and he's not shy about letting Quinn hear about it. She's not having it at all, though, and the episode ends with her shutting Skip the fuck down. Yeah. We go to credits on Round the Band by The Beta Band. I really, 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 really love that Quinn moment. Everything about mm-hmm. it, the tone, the hand on her head, just everything.
Yeah. The hand on her forehead says everything about how she's feeling, about her camp experience as a whole, right?
Yes.
She and Skip are actually a good pair here. They're both disappointed. The rainbow bubble of their childhood camp memories has popped. It's absolutely destroyed.
I feel like you're reveling in that a bit.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think that, like, Quinn's arc is really interesting. You know, it's the one that we spend the least time on, but
yes.
it's just fascinating.
There's, like, just enough of it to work, you know?
I don't want more. I'm just like... This has depth.
Yes. Yeah.
But let's not plumb those depths. Quinn being forgotten at the end also reminds me of the Daria Hunter when yes. buses leave Sandy behind at the paintball place. I feel like there's another episode where a character is left behind somewhere, but I can't remember. Am I just imagining things?
No, it sounds super familiar. I feel like there are probably a couple of examples. The one that jumps immediately to mind isn't necessarily the same thing, but it's from Just Add Water, where Kevin and Brittany end up in a lifeboat, like in the middle of nowhere, because they get left behind.
Yeah, there's just something really funny about that kind of conclusion.
Yeah, it's a nice little, oh boy. How are they going to get out of that one? I don't have to worry about it. It's the end of the episode. I really love Trent and Jane giving Daria shit. It's playful and funny and charming, and I could watch a whole episode of it. It's just so fun.
Mm-hmm. And I love that apparently Trent and Jane have practiced jokes, and Jane bet on the Miss Camp Grizzly sash being the winner.
Oh, it's so good.
Fantastic.
It's very good. Yeah. And finally... Like, I don't know. We talked about how the rest of this plot is kind of bizarre and this narrative arc is just weird. I'm in a weird place with the main narrative arc because I feel like we both did and did not get any kind of like proper resolution to it. Like in some ways I appreciate that we didn't get, you know, Daria and Amelia sitting down and really talking out their feelings, and, you know, wrapping everything up in a bow, like, I appreciate that not being the approach every single time, but I also feel like we missed maybe a little bit of conversation that could have gone a long way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, what feels did you want to hear about? Like, what end would be, have been more satisfying for you?
So I don't. And maybe, hey, look, maybe it's writing kind of true to life, but I wish that I could, at the end of, you know, we watched 20 minutes of an episode of Daria, which featured an A plot of Daria and this other character that we'd never seen before interacting. And I wish that I could tell you at the end of this episode where those two characters stood with each other. And I really can't do that. I can't tell you for certain if Amelia hates or likes Daria. I can't tell you for certain if Daria likes and respects Amelia for what she said, or is kind of insulted, but also like begrudgingly accepts what Amelia said. There's none of that. We don't get any of it. It's just kind of, you know, shrugged off at the end. And that's not necessarily bad. Again, you know, if you're writing true to life, you don't always wrap everything up with a nice bow. You don't always know where you sit with other people, especially if you've done them wrong.
Yeah. I feel like if we're going to like revise this episode, you know, like imagine a revision for this episode, mm-hmm. it's not the end that you have to look at. Like if there's a problem at some point, then you have to look earlier on, right? And I think the problem is that like Daria doesn't really actually have an arc. She starts camp in one place and she's pretty much in the same place that she was before, except now people think that she was an inspiration to someone.
Right.
And like that wasn't a conflict at all. Like that, I mean, like that wasn't what Daria was concerned about going in. You know, if there was anything that should have been tackled, it would have been like her trying to like resolve those issues of like, you know, being treated unfairly, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, having like confronting people about them and about that treatment, and you know, I mean, maybe not getting apologies, but just like having the courage to confront that.
Sure.
You know, I think that would have made for change, you know, character development. But instead we have someone else speaking up for her in a way that's like not really the point.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know.
I think that's a great point. And I'm thinking now to so how much 30 Rock have you watched? I feel like we've talked about this a fair amount. How much 30 Rock have you watched?
You know, I think I watched a lot of the earlier days of 30 Rock, but it's been a while since I've watched it.
Yeah. So some of it doesn't necessarily age well, including three episodes of blackface. Yeah. But there's an episode early on in the run where Liz Lemon goes to a class reunion.
Yes.
And it is kind of, it's kind of a similar setup to this where we have, you know, Liz desperately does not want to go. She's pushed into going. Her memories of this place she grew up in are horrible, and she felt like she was bullied all the time, and she never had any fun, and everybody was such a huge piece of shit to her. And she goes to the reunion, and all anybody can talk about is how it's amazing that she has the balls to show up because she was the biggest bully and the worst human being to everyone else around her.
Yeah, that was smart.
Right. I feel like that's a much more interesting way to do this. Obviously, you know, Liz Lemon and Daria Morgendorfer are two very different characters, and 30 Rock and Daria are two very different shows. It would not have been a good one-to-one translation, but it's just a more clever way to approach something like this.
But, you know, it totally could have gone in that direction because Daria's you know, being pretty mean here. So,
yeah, absolutely. Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. That was a good episode.
Oh, it was a great episode. There were a lot of great episodes of 30 Rock. That show rules. That should be our next podcast, is a 30 Rock rewatch. No, I don't have that in me.
I don't think
I am poo-pooing that.
That's a really long run.
It's a very long run.
I don't think I could critique Tina Fey.
No, same. I love her desperately. All right. Say we get into I don't have a cultural context for us this week, in part because nothing really stuck out, and also in part because I got my second vaccination shot for COVID-19. And
did you become a lump?
It destroyed me.
Oh, so that means your immune system is working.
Yeah. And what's weird about it is, like, when you feel like that, when you get that, like, you know, the fever and the chills and the aches and everything, you're so accustomed to, well, shit, this is my week, right? This, I'm going to feel like garbage for the next 7 days at least. Mm-hmm. But I woke up at like 3 a.m. on Sunday, like, oh, I have energy again. And I don't feel great, but I feel significantly better. So yeah, it took me, I think, another day to just kind of like get over all of it. But yeah, it was so bizarre to feel that shitty and then within like 12 hours feel so much better.
Well, I'm glad that you got it.
Yes, everybody should get it. The time after the second dose might suck, but it's definitely worth it.
I probably won't get mine until like the summer, but
yeah.
But when I do, we'll see each other.
Yes. Yeah. I've had some moral questions about whether I'm okay with like my having gotten it as early as I've gotten it.
Dude.
But also
you had heart surgery.
Yeah. Well, that's why my cardiologist is like, I don't necessarily know if you're considered high risk, but also if you can take it, get it.
Like, yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, a doctor told me, so I feel a little bit better. All righty. Do we want to roll into our episode rankings?
Yes. I'm curious to know how you rank this one.
Boy. Oh, boy. So I guess immediately I'm looking at, you know, Jonathan Greenberg's last episode, Groped by an Angel, mm-hmm. which happens to sit almost directly in the middle of our list.
Mm-hmm. Yes. At 28.
Yeah. And I'm looking at some of the episodes under it, and I'm thinking that maybe this one does not reach those heights.
You know, it's a shame because I felt like there was promise.
Yes, there absolutely was.
Like, the setup was good. I really liked the C plot, you know? I liked the parents' plot.
And there's potential here. Like, we have Trent engaging with a storyline. First of all, we have Trent engaging with a storyline.
Yes.
Secondly,
I loved the mental gymnastics that he performed to try and connect his plight with this, you know, cookie.
Yeah. But then the place we go with it is just kind of like, oh, all right, you know, we're gonna make fun of country folk a little bit and you know, we're gonna get in and out. And like, you know, could have been a little better. And then we have this whole bizarre and insulting and weird mix up thing with Daria and Amelia. And like, is Amelia trying to single white female Daria? It's just bad. It's weird and not good. And it could have been handled, I think, much more elegantly. I think you could have explored so many neat spaces here, and we just kind of didn't. And that's a bit of a bummer. I feel bad ragging on the episode that much when we've actually had a pretty good time talking about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I don't consider this a bad episode of Daria. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think it's a particularly good one either. I don't know. So I think, you know, when we start talking about like bad episodes of Daria, you know, we look around, let's say Mauled, this year's model, Old and Beautiful.
Yeah, I am looking at about around of human bonding and Just Add Water. Like, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. I kind of enjoyed Ill. Like, there are things about Ill that I enjoy, that I liked. Like,
you went back and checked that out
last
too.
Night. Yeah. Last night I texted you a screenshot of the inside of Jane's locker. And the picture in there is just horrifying, but it's just amazing detail, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, there are a lot of things that I liked about the scenario with Ill. I remember of human bonding being kind of just disappointing.
Yes.
And Just Add Water was...
was bad. It was not a good episode.
So I think that this would go between Ill and of human bonding.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, I mean, so I'm in a position where, like, I don't necessarily think it goes that low.
Okay.
But also, I do not feel strongly enough about any particular aspect of this episode to try to propel it any higher. I'm trying to think of like,
like Mauled is trying to make a point. This year's model is trying to make a point. The Old and the Beautiful, Daria has some kind of character development, right?
Yeah.
So Ill, you know, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it is fair to say that this is an episode that isn't necessarily trying to make a point. Or if it is, it's doing it in a not great manner. So yeah, I think, you know, between not having anything that can necessarily drag it up particularly high, and, you know, all the different ways in which we can say like, well, this could have been better. This could have been better. This could have actually said something. This could have improved upon any of this. I do think the, you know, even the one thing where we were like, wow, that's actually pretty clever, you know, the C plot, the way it's wrapped up kind of craps on it a bit.
Yeah. But, yeah.
That's just a bummer. It's a bummer all around.
It was strong to start out.
Yeah.
Maybe the issue was that it was juggling three plots. You know, and
that could be it. They just tried to do too much. And it just
needed a little more room to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
I could buy that. And I mean, we get to see so little of early teen Daria and early teen Quinn. And for things to have been used in that way, for those looks at their characters to have been used the way that they were used in this episode, is just kind of a bummer. Like, there's so much more space to explore there, and we just didn't really get any of it.
So, you cool with that spot?
Yeah, did we decide on 43 between Ill and of human bonding?
Yes.
Alrighty, so we're gonna...
For the record, I came in here not knowing where I wanted this to be.
Same. I had no idea. I was like, well, let me look at the last episode that person did. But no, I think that's, you know, I wish we had more good things to say about it, I guess. I really want to like this episode a lot more.
I do
too. Yeah. I just kind of don't.
Fair enough.
All right. So that leaves us with Camp Fear at number 43, Under Ill and Above of Human Bonding. Season 5, off to a weird and rocky start so far. Phys Ed at 10, Sappy Anniversary at 14, Fat Like Me at 34, and Camp Fear at 43. Those are sequential, by the way. So, yeah, it looks like our next episode is going to be somewhere around number 75. Yeah. All right. So, I think that about wraps that up. Should we get into our outro?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Man, some aspects of this episode have been absolutely like flowing, and some aspects have just been like chewing on pearls.
Well, I would just like to point out that I didn't get your joke, that joke fell flat because I'm just terrible at math. I was just like, oh yeah, sure, 78.
Sounds right, yeah. That checks out.
Yeah.
All right, that about wraps it up for this episode of Morgan Dorks. Check out our Patreon. You can sign up at patreon.com/MorganDorks. $1 a month. You can support this silly little mission and listen to an unedited version of each podcast a few days before it airs. As always, please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at MorganDorks, email us at MorganDorks@gmail.com, or check out our website, anchor.fm/MorganDorks. We're also on Facebook. Check out fb.me/MorganDorks.podcast, or it's much easier to just search for MorganDorks. Special thanks, as always, to Outpost Daria Reborn. Link is in the show notes. Also, check the show notes for that picture of Rebecca, the classy-ass raccoon of the White House. As always, thank you, Nyssa.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, speaking of classy-ass raccoons.
Are you calling me a raccoon? I kind of like it.
But a classy one. Thank you, listeners. We'll see you again in 2 weeks for Season 5, Episode 5. We are almost halfway through the final season of this show.
Wow.
Yeah. Season 5, Episode 5, The Story of D. And boy, will we have to talk about that title here on Morgan Dorks. I forgot to hit the... Oh, my God. All right. I forgot to hit the outro music.
Press the button.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that.